The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
That's a little Vinyl Rain for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuning in to Radio Memphis Around the World with me, D. And that band actually was a side project straight up out of New York from a gentleman. You guys, you know, we've talked to this person before. You've heard me talk about him. We've had him on the show before. You guys remember Mr. Greg Smith. Now, Greg Smith is probably one of the most underrated bass players on the planet. He is absolutely insanely fantastic. And you guys may also know him because he is the current bass player for Ted Nugent. He's also toured and done stuff with the likes of Billy Joel, Alice Cooper, Richie Blackmore's Rainbow, Alan Parsons Project, Crystal Bowersock, you know, Blue Oyster Cult, Dokken, Graham Bonnet. The list keeps going and going and going. Now, in reference to Radio Memphis Around the World, you know, we've always talked about the Wizards of Winter, who is a former Artist of the Month for us. And of course, you know, it's a Christmas rock outfit, and he as part of that group as well. Well, you know, what's really cool is that when, you know, my world start kind of colliding, you know, on this show, and you start going through some things, you know, because you guys know I'm a stalker and I try to find some things out about my artists and where they're at and what they've got going on. And when I can come across some cool pictures, you know, of this particular artist who is actually, you know, kind of hanging out with the guest that I'm getting ready to talk to, the worlds just kind of go, you know, kind of intertwine in my head, and I'm like, okay, there's way too many stories. Now, if you guys are wondering what I'm talking about, okay, I am actually talking about none other than Mr. Ken Barr. Now, a lot of people know him as being probably one of the coolest and probably most experienced tour manager, road crew person, to the point where he is the only one, I believe, that truly and successfully put out a book that simply states, "We are the road crew." Okay? Now, one of the things that you have to understand, and this is pretty much the essence of what his book was about, was that, you know, everybody's been to a concert, everybody's been to a show, and whether you realize this or not, especially one of those big shows, man, there's an army of technicians that are out there, and they're actually putting all of these things together, and they're actually keeping everything running. And of course, you know, if they were doing their job, you didn't know, all right, because they're behind the scenes, and they're making all of this magic happen, okay? Now, when it's all said and done, a lot of people don't even realize that there's a crew. And, you know, and of course, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, what you have to understand is that not only is there a crew, you know, they're there right in the onslaught, you know, they're setting everything up, they're making sure things are running through the entire show. And then when that show is done, they're breaking things down, they're getting everything loaded back up, and they're getting ready to do another presentation all over again, you know, for the next gig. And, you know, and there's, you know, there's an individual that pretty much was able to capture, you know, the total essence of this whole idea. Now, Ken started at a really young age, okay? And what I love about him is that, you know, it pretty much started from a dream, you know, that was inspired by liner notes, okay? And, you know, with that being said, you know, he's done a ton of different things. He's toured with a bunch of big musical acts. He's done everything from tour managing, working on television productions, to being in the recording studio. He's worked with people like Kiss, Alice Cooper, see the connection, Stone Temple Pilots, Rainbow, The Bangles, Debbie Gibson, Air Supply, and the list keeps going on and on. He's done, say, he works with SeaWorld, you know, as far as for their event production. 70,000 tons of metal. Yes, I've seen the big rockets of flames that he's been responsible for, and I think it's fantastic. You know, what's even more beautiful is that not only was he able to do all of this in his career, he also kind of re-imaged and found himself again, and he becomes not only a successful author, he is also a filmmaker, a writer, director, and producer, okay? And he's the creator of Ken Barr Films. And this is, you know, the more I can sit there and keep going on and on and on and on and talk about him, but I figured it was just better to, like, bring him in, and so we can actually have a chat with him. And because of all the stuff that's probably locked up in that head of his, I want him to be able to share with all of our fans, all our listeners, especially all of our artists. So for those of you that are hanging out with me right here in Radio Memphis Around the World, I happen to have Mr. Ken Barr on the phone with me right now. How you doing, brother?
I am good. I'm exhausted after listening to that list of what I do. God, I need a nap.
I was saying, Ken, man, I tried to shorten it, dude.
That's awesome. I didn't know you were going to have Greg Smith something he recorded on. Greg's one of my brothers.
I do that on purpose because, like I told you, and for those of you that have tuned in, I'm talking to Ken Barr. I told you I stalk, okay? So because I'm trying to find out who you are and, you know, everything that you've got going on. And I come across this old picture, and I see you and Greg, and I'm like, oh, Wait a minute. Yeah. That's right. He worked on Alice Cooper. Okay. Now I'm okay. All right. So
you know what? More further back than that, we worked in the same rock clubs on Long Island.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it goes back to when we were kids. I mean, for his brother lives 10 minutes away. I go to barbecues there. They saw their family.
Oh, so you know Dirt.
And you're right. Greg is he's an amazing bass player. He's an amazing singer. And he's also an amazing human being. He is truly part of my family, and I've always considered him my brother.
Wow.
You'll hear me use that term a lot.
Yes.
Guys I've toured with that have become family are truly my brothers, and that's something that's very prevalent with a lot of us.
That is so fantastic. That makes me feel so warm and fuzzy and stuff. We love Greg here at Radio Memphis too. You know, we expect a lot of good things.
Has he been interviewed on here before?
He has.
That bastard.
He has. And you know what? Look, you know what's even cool? You know how cool he is? Check this out. So he was getting ready to go in and do a show with Tommy, you know, the Shondells, and he was sitting in his car in the cold, okay, so that he could do an interview mm-hmm. with me.
Greg is a regular person. You know, I've been in places with him, you know, a bar, a restaurant, it doesn't matter. And, you know, if you meet people, he would, you know, hi, I'm Greg. It wasn't, I am the bass player that does all these amazing things. It was just Greg. And if you didn't know him and you didn't specifically ask, it didn't come up. Because I was the same way with what I was doing.
Absolutely.
That's probably why, you know, we're connected, because that's a part of us, but that's not all we are, you know?
And, absolutely.
You know, Greg was, well... There's probably nothing left for me to say about Greg. He's already been on your show.
Well, you know, and hopefully he's tuned in so he can hear what you've got to say, and so he knows that we've been smearing his name all over the place. But today is a cool day for me because I get to talk to you. And yes, we get to. It's funny because, you know, and those of you that are tuned in and talking to Ken Barr, you know, you wind up, you know, touching, you know, a lot of people's careers and a lot of people's, you know, shows and things like that. So when we have these conversations and stuff that we're getting ready to get into, you know, it's funny how everything, you know, is just kind of really revolves and everything kind of comes back in, and people don't realize, you know, the road crew, little village of people, everybody knows everybody,
and that's why don't screw up, because everybody's going to know and they're all going to talk about it.
Well, you know, you and I, we've had several conversations on the phone before we had the opportunity to do our interview today, and you know, and we've cut up, you know, we've had a lot of fun, and you know, it's been awesome, you know, as far as time to, you know, get in your mind. One of the things that, you know, Ken, I have to appreciate, I asked you directly right off the bat. It was like, okay, why? When did this start? And you told me just the coolest story about being 13, 14 years old, sitting on your bed with a particular album.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know.
So was that the setup? Now I give the story?
Yeah, well, kind of. You know, you're doing
awesome.
Good. You're doing good.
Okay, yeah. I need a bit of coaxing here and there, you know. I'm like that actor who's going, line.
work with me, honey. I'm leading you to water. Come on.
Okay, yeah. I'm a thirsty horse. I'll go. Yeah, it, you know, when I was a kid, I think the hardest thing for kids, and it doesn't matter when we were kids or kids today, is not having direction. I think that is just, you don't know where you want to be, so you're wasting time and you're not on your way to where you want to be because you don't know.
Right.
And I remember in 19, I think it was, I have to be careful because there are elements of my own life that KISS fans have corrected me on because apparently I misremembered, so I have to be very careful.
Okay.
It was in 1976, the Paul Lynn Halloween special, KISS, were on.
Okay.
And it knocked me out and changed my life.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's not as though I saw, you know, what they were doing and said, that's who I want to be. It was, that is amazing, and I want to do something amazing. And,
wow.
And that was how it started.
Okay.
And then, you know, you become a fan of the band. You start getting the records, and you start hearing that music, and especially the live I love live records. It doesn't matter whose it's you know, it's a moment in time. It's a, you know, a captured, it's like lightning in a bottle to
love
me.
Love it.
And KISS Alive came out. Well, I think it was already out. A bit of a careful KISS fans, please.
They won't say anything. They're good.
And, it caught the magic, you know, because there are parts on there where Paul's talking to the audience. And, you know, I used to have a couple of little spotlight things, and, you know, I'd turn my lights off and put those on and, you know, pretend I was there. You know, and sometimes, of course, you pretend you're Paul Stanley or whoever. It's just amazing.
I love
and,
it.
You know, you get a little
did
older.
Did you draw
you know,
the star?
Life 2 comes out, and when you opened it up, you know, had that big double album gatefold in the picture, and all the pictures of you know, the picture of the band, and then all the tour listings. And I'm looking at, you know, these different people, and I kind of had to figure out what their jobs were. You know, what's the rigger do? And then, you know, you get the dictionary out, you know, and the old encyclopedia off the dusty shelf. And, okay, what's a guitar tech? And I went through, and I figured out what everybody did, and I thought, that is amazing. I didn't know those were jobs.
Wow.
And I thought, I don't know which one of those jobs I want, but I want to work towards that.
I want to do, you know, one of them.
What's that?
I said, you're like, I want to do one of them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's all about direction. But it's all about, you know, narrowing down the direction. And it takes some paring down. And, you know, it's like cutting off the windy roads off the main road, which is the boulevard of your life.
Well, sure.
And, you know, the less turns there are, the less choices to make, and the less chances to screw up. So I remember reading, I had the names of every crew member memorized. And I remember thinking to myself, this is amazing. These guys are on this Kiss Alive 2. You know,
wow.
These guys, that's forever. That's on there. That's it. That's it. You can't take that away.
That's forever.
And I thought to myself, wouldn't that be awesome if there was another Kiss Alive record and I was on it? And through a lot of hard work, but a lot of luck and some good people that helped me along the way,
yeah,
I did the Kiss Revenge Tour, and they recorded it. And in 1993, Kiss Alive 3 came out. And I was Eric's drum tech, and I could not have been prouder.
Oh, wow.
I have the gold record, which is one of my favorites. And it just, you know, that's magic. And only in rock and roll do you find that kind of magic.
That is magic. And that is so rock and roll. that is crazy. That is absolutely crazy. And it's so funny because, you know, in the matter of you talking about seeing liner notes, and that's, you know, and I appreciate that we even bring this up, you know, because that thought process has been lost for so long, and now everybody's kind of gotten back to, man, I want to know who worked on this, or I want to know who's behind that. It's not just what they see; they want to know who's behind the scenes, you know.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, you were able to just talk about a dream, talk about, you know, you shortened about, you know, a bunch of years, you know, going from, you know, zero to Mach 10, you know, and getting to a place that you pretty much, you know, professed at the age of 14, you know, which is absolutely crazy for me. So, and when a lot of people look at you, you know, and they think, okay, what can I do, or where can I be, or how can I do? You know, it's got to be easy, because it looks like you went from you know, just getting started to working with all these incredible bands. They didn't see all the stuff in the middle, you know.
Yeah, and there's a lot. There's a lot of dues paying. There's a lot of cutting your teeth, figuring out what you want to do, sound, lights, you know, instruments, backline, and then there people.
Uh oh, wait a minute. You're cutting out. I have actually got Mr. Ken Barr back on the phone with us right here on Radio Memphis. And we were just discussing his career and discussing how things got really, really, really crazy. And it went from like zero to Mach 10. And, you know, and we're really kind of jumping into it. How are you doing, Ken?
I'm good. It's funny that technology failed the tech guy. So
I was not going to bring that up, because you're like the tech guy, you know. And it's funny because, you know, all the different stuff that you've done, and then we've got this thing with the phone. So.
Well, you know, it's the regular everyday stuff that baffles me. So.
Well, and that's normally how it works.
150 foot column of fire. Yeah, I got you. The phone connected. Maybe not.
That was a beautiful, beautiful fire column that you sent, you, because you actually texted me a picture of what you were working on, and that was the stuff through SeaWorld, some of the event production and stuff that you were doing over there. Was that right?
Yep, that's correct.
Man, that was huge. That was a big thing, and it was like, whoa! Don't you have to have a license for that?
We were working with the builder, with the company, so it all goes under them, so it was all good.
Good. Okay, as long as you're taken care of.
Oh, no, I always dot the I's and cross the T's. I'm all good.
Perfect. Now, kind of going back to some of the beginning stuff for you as far as, getting into your career. So we figured out that, you decided that you wanted to kind of get on it. And one of the things that I did learn about you was that you told me that you started out as a musician and it didn't go well.
I was terrible. I was a terrible guitar player.
I was trying to make it sound really cool and sexy, but you're honest.
No, I'm so honest. You get to a point in your life where it's like, yeah, I don't need any BS. I'll tell you, I was terrible, let me say.
So you figure out, all right, I'm going to try to see if I can start help. What's the first, and be behind the scenes, what's the first thing that you do, as a young person? What's the first thing you do?
Well, it's funny. I've got a little connect the dots as well, because the town I lived in had one big bar, and they sometimes let bands play on the weekends. And
okay.
Whoever was playing, the rest of us would all carry equipment and milk crates in to avoid the $2 cover charge.
Right.
So that's how I actually, the very first gigs. And one of the gigs was, one of the bands from my high school was a cover band called Borrowed Time.
Oh, wow.
Keyboard player / singer was Al Fritsch, who plays with Greg Smith and Tommy James and the Shondells.
How funny that works. See, here we go. All right. The world gets smaller.
So that's what it was, and we set up the lights, we set up the set, you did everything, and you start gravitating towards, all right, well, you run the light board, I'll stay on stage, if something breaks, I'll fix it.
Right.
And that's where you start to kind of refine what you do.
I gotcha.
One of the things, I meet a lot of young up-and-comers when I do the 70,000 tons of metal. I have a crew, I do the main pull deck stage. I stage manage the 4 days of shows.
Right.
And I have the best guys. They work so hard, and they want to get in the industry full-time and work their way up, and they'll always ask me. And they'll tell me, I do everything. I do sound, I do lights, I said, no, you need to do one thing and be the best there is at it,
Wow.
When they hear I do lights, I do sound, it's okay, jack of all trades, master of none. You don't want that.
Right.
Be the best at one thing, Greg Smith is a great bass player, and he's doing pretty well for himself.
He is.
Since he's in the topic of the day, we can use him as the example.
We're just gonna use him through the whole thing, whatever we got to do. Yeah, throw him on the bus and everything.
You know what? He'd come up smiling.
I know. See, that's the beautiful thing about somebody like that, is that he still would look good doing it,
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's starting out. It was clubs. It was bars. It was, for no money or $10. And, I had a day job in a car lot, because I could leave at any time to go do gigs. So I'd be changing oil, putting in radios, and then it was like, all right, I got to go to this bar and set up. So that's how it started.
Okay.
And, where I grew up, Long Island, there were different levels of bands. And, this was the day of the 1,000-seat rock club with Twisted Sister playing it.
I'm so glad you said that statement. And this is how, ESPN, you and I are really kind of connected. So I'm holding your book. Yes, I got it yesterday, the We Are the Road Crew. Picked it up from Amazon. It was actually cool. Came really quickly and stuff. And I was able to kind of at least go through a couple of things. And on my on the page I have turned back, I have this, and it's titled The Ladder Up and Down. There are three levels. There are different levels of,
yeah.
Or actually, there are different levels of bands and stuff. And as far as dependent upon how well you do. And so you just see, I don't even need the book. I'm just gonna talk to you.
Yep. it couldn't be more true. I've seen a lot of guys, really, a lot of talented crew guys, get acknowledged, work their way up, and once they get there, they become jerks. And they become less than responsible because they've made it. They think they're safe. You're never safe. You're only as good as your last gig. And you start with an attitude. When you work with somebody in this business, you not only work with them, you live with them.
There it is.
And they can be the best at what they do, but if the rest of the crew can't stand living with them, you're not going to survive.
Wow.
So I've seen people go up that ladder and stay up, and I've seen people go right back down it,
Wow.
And you got to be careful. You're only as good as your last gig, and nobody wants to work with a jerk, so don't be one. the overall tone of the book, you know, a lot of people that haven't read it, it's that book is a celebration of my career, and there's not one negative thing in it because I had a great career,
right.
And I'm thankful for that.
Yes.
Whatever else I do in my life from here to, you know, eternity, I have that, and that's why I celebrated it with that book.
That's awesome.
So
great. Yeah, it's good stuff so far. It's very good stuff. Yeah. You know.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
So, you know, it's be thankful for what you've got. You know, if you're out there working for an arena band, stay there. Because going back down to a club tour is no fun, you know?
So ultimately, as a technician, you know, as road crew, you start out, and everybody, you know, you start out in the trenches, and you know, you start out at the local gigs, you know, and the local bars and things like that. So ultimately, you know, when you know, and everybody's definition is going to be different. Okay, what is the ultimate goal as being on road crew? I mean, what's the ultimate, you know, outlook on what it is that you're wanting to be doing ultimately?
Well, there are a lot of different answers to that. My answer was always, my feeling when I did a show was a lot of people, money is real tight, and this show might be the only thing they get to do all year long.
Right.
And I'm going to do my damnedest to make sure that this is like a night at Madison Square Garden, you know?
Nice.
This show needs to be perfect, and that's how I approached it. That's all. I know a lot of guys that approach it that way. So as far as the gig, the optimum is perfect show. You know, no lazy, no stupid, no screw-ups, no nothing. Perfect.
Right.
And you put a lot of pressure on yourself, but there should be. There's 20,000 people out there that plunk down their hard-earned money, you know. So your stuff does need to be, you know, squared away and ready to go.
Yes.
You know, there are other guys, you know, they're goal might be, you know, to hook up with somebody before the show and trade a backstage pass for a favor. Okay, that's great. There's a lot of guys that, you know, have had good careers and still did that. That just, you know, that wasn't where I was at with it.
Right.
You know, because I'm OCD, and I had this whole little routine, you know.
What is everybody with the OCD? I mean, do all artists, musicians, techs, people in the industry world, does everybody have OCD?
I think there's a certain amount of discipline that kind of maybe transmogrifies it. I don't know. But, like, I used to file Eric's drumsticks after dinner. So at 6 o'clock, I had a spot that I would set up.
Yeah.
And his drumsticks were filed a certain way so, you know, his sweaty hands could hold them.
Sure.
And if I wasn't doing that at 6 o'clock, I wasn't going to have a good gig.
Oh.
And then at 7 o'clock, I get, you know, I go over the drum kit one more time. And then I'd make sure I had the towel, the this. So, you know, I've just kind of pushed hard with that, and that my day was regimented. My day was spoken for. So,
wow.
And we always had a good show. So, you know,
that's the way it's supposed to be.
Is it connected? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe I'm full of crap, but it worked for me. So I think finding something that works for you as well, you know, that's important.
That is important. So you start on the local scene. Okay, and for those of you that have tuned in, I'm talking to the industry pro, the road crew man himself, Mr. Ken Varr. You're starting local, and you know what would you consider your first big break?
Well, I'd been doing it for a while. You know, I was 19, 20 years old, working 6 days a week, working four nights a week, and just not getting anywhere. So I walked away.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't do any shows for well over a year just because it didn't feel like the opportunities were there. And I was going without sleep, and I just got burned out.
Right.
And there was used to be a band called The Cut on Long Island. And
okay.
They were a couple of levels up from where I'd been working. And a guy I had been friends with, working, you know, with other bands, a guy named Rainey, I showed up at their gig one night, drank way too much, and Rami talked me into coming back to doing shows, and he introduced me to the band, so I was a bit intoxicated, and God bless them, they hired me anyway, and that was the break. That was literally the break that brought me to a higher level. I had to be better. I had to learn to be better. And the guys in that band, the drummer is a guy named John Michelli, who's played drums for Meatloaf for 25 years, for Brian May,
yes.
Played on Broadway. And the bass player slash singer, Tommy Henriksen, has co-produced Alice Cooper's last two records. He's been in Alice's band for 5-6 years.
How cool.
And just that level of talent is what I started back with in the clubs. And, you know, we worked together and we did gigs together here and there. Like when Meatloaf played Madison Square Garden for the first time,
right.
John's drum tech had to go home because his mom passed away. And John called me because I was in between gigs, and I just went out and did, you know, a couple of gigs with Meatloaf, you know, and I was with him when he played Madison Square Garden the first time.
Oh, wow. That is crazy. You
know, yeah, it's all connected.
That is so crazy.
That is the you know, there's two pages in the book where I thank the guys in the cut, because my life before going to work for the cut, I didn't have direction. I lost that direction, and I lost that spark, and it wasn't a good thing. I was lost. I was letting the river take me, and I was aggravated. I was drinking too much, and I was on a bad road. And if I hadn't gotten that gig, you know, I don't know where things would have gone, but they certainly wouldn't have ended up with me on the Live 3. So I thank those three guys, Johnny Roggio, John Michelli, and Tommy Henriksen, because they gave me that gig, which introduced me to other bands on that level, and I went to work for them, for Rough Cut, for Syntron, all these bands that were very well respected, and you had to be a good road crew. You had to have all your stuff done. And that's where I really learned the disciplines, was that, you know, couple of levels up of band.
Wow.
And, you know, that made all the difference. And if those guys had said, no, we don't want that guy, I can't imagine what would have happened. So, you know, I'm very thankful. I always know where I came from, and I know who helped me get there, and I'll never forget it. I'll always appreciate it.
That is in your book, and for those of you who've tuned in, he's talking about the "We Are the Road Crew" by Ken Barr, and it is the section that's titled "The Next Level" that you actually are talking about. The cut, Rough Cut, and you know what we were just mentioning, and that, you know, it's funny because you got to remember, you know, Ken, during that time period when, you know, they give you that opportunity, and yes, they were, you know, an upper level band, you know, that you were probably, you know, less accustomed to working with until that point, you know, they were still making their way too, you know? And so,
oh, absolutely.
And what's beautiful is that you were part of their moment as they're raging on, you know what I mean? In the beginning as well.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and so there's got to be an element of a relationship. There's got to be an element of, you know, we understand what, you know, where everybody sits. We, you know, everybody knows what lane to stay in. And also everybody knows, you know, to get along, you know, and there, so there had to have been some type of magic on that end too.
I think we all just kind of clicked. We were all just a band of brothers, and pretty much from the first day. And we are all to this day, we are all still friends. We all, I think, via Facebook more than anything, but we all stay in touch. You know, all our birthdays are within 2 weeks of each other.
And, oh, nice.
You know, it's just, it's been family. You know, I think that was my first sense of family with people I worked with, you know, was with those guys. And they remain family to this day.
It's hard, you know, because, you know, you sit there and we talk about the industry, you know, and, you know, and you talk about the music business. And one of the things that everybody kind of really, really, you know, longs for and strives for is to be able to have that knit of people that you can go, I can trust you, I can turn my back, and you'll be right there, you know, and, yep, you know, and we're all on the same wavelength. At the same time, now, as you're going up the ladder, as we say it, you know, are you, and you're very driven, you know, you're very directed. Apparently, from what now you've told me, you're very OCD. And you have to have a certain sense of order, which is good. You know, the higher up that you get on that ladder, you know, do you find, you know, the harder it is to have that relationship personally with anybody?
You know, as I went up that ladder, the people that connected with were more genuine.
I'm so glad you said that.
They became family. Like, there's a guy listening to us right now. His name's Batty, Kevin Walsh. He was Iron Maiden's guitar tech for years.
Oh, nice.
I worked with him on Alice Cooper. He's listening right now.
Hey, probably, brother.
He should to go out to the pub, but he's waiting to hear to listen to this.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Well, then, you know, since we know that at some point, you know, later on, you know, we're going to have to rope him in, and we're going to have to talk to him too. So we're all going to have like a powwow at some point.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. Be part of it. But those are lasting friendships, family. You know, you getting up the ladder, there's backstabbers, there's people that think they're going to get where they want to go by, you know, sabotaging you rather than honing their craft. But once you hit that level, everybody's worked hard to get there, and nobody screws around. It's you're good at what you do, and that's why you're here. And don't screw up, and stay here, and we'll all be family. And that's what it tends to be. You know, tour goes out for 6 months. You're all family by the end of it. Even if you don't see each other again for years, you're still family.
That's nice, and that's ultimately the way it was supposed to be. And you know, Ken, you know, we talked. One of the things that was really important for me, you know, and to be able to have a conversation with you on air, I've told you about, you know, what we do here at Radio Memphis. You know, of course, we've got a bunch of different shows and stuff, you know, that you know, and genre specific. This particular show, we get to play all genres. Although I did make it a point to kind of rock it up in the very beginning, just because, like, in your honor, just so you know that.
I appreciate it. I had a feeling.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of like Spidey sense thing you had going on, I'm sure. But one of the things that that was really important was that we're musicians, you know, radio station, as much as we are, you know, fans and people who enjoy the music. And one of the things that they always know that they can tune in for information. They always know they can tune in for advice. They always know that they can, you know, tune in for tips and tricks and stuff. And this whole concept is completely aside from people who are, you know, the front men, people who are the lead guitarists, people who are the drummers, and, you know, who are in the limelight. And I want everybody, you know, to really truly understand just how important it is behind the scenes that all of this magic happens, and what it takes to make it happen, you know. And even in that world, you know, there's a struggle, and then, you know, and there's, you know, there's hustle, and there's a, you know, you, everybody's, you know, you're wanting to get, you know, that gig, you know, that everybody goes, oh, you know, absolutely ape over, and, you know, and be the one that's behind the scenes going, yeah, man, I made that happen, I'm so excited, and I'm so proud. So you get the cut. You wind up, you know, going up a little bit further in your next break. And which I found kind of cool, you know, I see that you wound up working with Air Supply. You wound up working with Debbie Gibson and stuff, you know. How did that happen?
Debbie Gibson was my first break in the business.
Okay.
And I am actually still friends with her and the family.
Oh, nice.
Her mom lives about 5 hours south of me and is actually trying to help me with a couple of movie treatments. She's trying to help me get them placed with someone that'll look at them.
Oh, fantastic.
Still family. Here's how the Debbie Gibson thing went. I used to work at the car lot.
Okay.
You know, that was my day gig. That was my rent money. I know I can, you know, even if I don't have any gigs, I'm good. And there was a guy named Pugsley. Well, his name is Al Meshcon, but we called him Pugsley. And he worked across the street at a place called Auto Rot. Mm-hmm. They would cut out your rusty undercarriage and weld in new. And he was doing the same thing. And he had this gig with Debbie Gibson, who at this time had a top 10 hit but was still in high school.
That's
so
right.
So he'd play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then home all week. Well, he had gotten a gig that was finally gotten his break and was going to go out on the road. And I remember he walked across the street one day and asked if I'd be interested in taking that gig. And at this point, nothing was really going on in the rock clubs. So I said, well, let me go to a rehearsal and try it, and I'll see. And it was up more levels than I could have imagined. They paid me to go to rehearsal.
What?
You know, what? 3 shows a week. The car lot was okay with it. And then I did that for a few months, and then Debbie graduated high school, and we went out on the road, and we did a real tour. We played outdoor amphitheaters. We played Radio City Music Hall.
Oh, wow.
That was my first tour. I didn't do a club tour. I was in the trenches, but not really. I mean, I don't want to disrespect the guys that have really been in the trenches, but,
well, sir,
you know, that was my first break. And on that tour, I met the sound man who knew the Air Supply guys, and he knew they were looking for a crew. So before the Gibson tour ended, I had that. And the same guy, Steve Botting, he was married and still is married to the drummer from the Bangles. They were getting ready to go out after Air Supply was done, and he hired me.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's all who you know and who's seen you work and how you work.
And that it was just that simple. And it was through connection and connecting the dots, it was just that simple.
It all fell into place better than I could have planned. And I am, but, you know, you'll hear me use the word thankful quite a bit. And it did. You know, it was Air Supply. Okay, I'm home for Christmas. So, well, but now I'm out with the Bangles for a couple of months.
Wow.
Oh, Debbie's doing another arena tour now. you know, within a year and a half, I'm doing arenas. It was insane. And, you know, once again, that word thankful comes into play because it just never stopped. I finished, I was still on the Debbie Gibson tour when I got offered the Alice Cooper Trash Tour.
Okay.
I had to miss the first 4 weeks of that because I was in Australia with Debbie Gibson.
Well, sure.
And then it just became a hell of a rocket ride from, you know, I went back and forth between Debbie Gibson tours and Alice Cooper. And then Eric Singer got into Kiss and he brought me with him. And
wow.
It was just, I think they say that success is, or luck is being prepared when the opportunity arises.
Apparently.
And I did work really hard, but I will always say it was a lot of luck. You know, I was fortunate. There's no guarantees in the business. I happen to have a heck of a run for which I'll always be thankful, you know. I got to go out when Greg got into Alice Cooper's band in 91. I got to tour with my family, with Greg.
Yeah.
You know, Greg and the drummer from Rainbow, John O'Reilly, took me on the Rainbow tour a couple years later. And it just, you know, it was just nothing but fun and good people.
Well, you know, it's funny because one of the things, you know, Ken, and for those of you who have tuned in, you know, I'm talking to Ken Barr. You wind up working with a lot of different folks, but just the ones that we've mentioned, you know, you and intently because of a certain, you know, time frame. You know, I remember a lot of this stuff when it was coming out too. I'm not going to give out my age, but just so I'm just going to throw that out there. Do you realize though that you wound up kind of getting lined up with particular acts, you know, that were making a stamp, you know, in their world and their genre, you know, as far as, you know, and what they had going on at that time, you know?
Well, I think I felt that the most with Stone Temple Pilots because I came in at the Purple record, the second record, and they'd already gotten the ball rolling, and
sure.
That record came out and went straight to number one. You know, that's when alternative was still, you know, really big, and I knew I was a part of something, and it really was something. But, you know, as far as the other tours, you know, everyone I worked with, I've never had a bad gig. But I was a huge Alice Cooper fan. I was a huge Kiss fan. I was a huge Ritchie Blackmore fan.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm getting paid to do something I'd have done for free. Just please don't tell them that.
Nobody's listening. Don't say it out loud.
But the I think Stone Temple Pilots, I came in as a hired gun, you know. They were experiencing growing pains. They were trying to have a buddy still be their guitar tech, and it just wasn't working.
Right.
The production manager was someone I knew, and he called me and he said, "All right, can you be in Miami tomorrow?" And I said, I can do that, yeah.
Wow.
And I flew in. We did a run through that afternoon. I didn't even know their songs. And then that was that. I did a couple of tours with them, and it was just, you know, the whole band were talented, but there was a spark to Scott Weiland. That guy, you know, when he passed away, I put a little thing up, and, you know, he was amazing. He was talented. He was dangerous. There's never going to be another like him.
You know, not
God
like that.
Him. And, you know, I hope he's at peace, but I just, that guy, there was just a mystique there. He's the most genuine person you're ever going to, you know, come across.
Right.
You know, and he had his troubles, and I'm sorry for that, but.
Well, yeah.
He, you know, he could make an arena erupt or hold them in the palm of his hand.
Sure.
And there was magic there. There truly was. I mean, they're a great band still, and, you know, my friend Tommy Hendrickson actually sang with them a little bit. They did some shows in Japan.
Right.
But, you know, there was a magic to Scott Weiland, and I'll always be thankful that I got to not just get to know him, but to see him perform up close. You know,
it was
something.
And see all those magic moments. You know, it's funny. You and I were talking the other night, and I asked you about being around all of these groups, you know, and of course, you know, you working your magic and, you know, and the event production and the tour managing and things like that. You know, you got to the point where you could kind of figure out whether or not, you know, songs were going to be great or whether or not things were going to be a hit. Hello?
No, not really, because, well, like, Alive 3, you know, I would have bet that thing would have gone through the roof, and I think it went platinum.
Right.
I think. I know what I like, and I know what might be a hit, but there's been so much music out there that I scratch my head and I go, how is this so popular? So I think that's where I kind of have more of the on the road ear, not the producing a record ear.
Okay. You know? There's a difference.
Oh, I absolutely think there's a difference because I know how stuff is supposed to sound on an arena stage.
You know how it's supposed to. You like the, see, that's where you live in the live world. You know
exactly.
You live in
exactly,
live world.
The live world. You know, I know. Like I used to have a sweet spot between Dean's floor monitor and his guitar cabinets, where you were getting 120 decibels out of all of it from every direction, and it was like this big blanket of warm guitar tones destroying your hearing. And I knew exactly how it was supposed to sound, and or with Gene's bass, you know, I knew how that should not only sound, but how you should feel the punch that he wants. He wants that thing to be punching him and letting him know it's there.
Right.
Those are the things I could walk into the room with rental equipment and make it sound the way it needed to.
That's crazy. See, that's crazy. But see, there's an art to all of that. You know, there's an absolute art to all of that. We are currently talking to Mr. Ken Barr. We are the Road Crew author. He is also owner and creator of Ken Barr Films. He's an independent filmmaker, and he's got a lot of stories and tales from the road. How are you doing, honey?
I'm good. That singer you just had, Hannah, she is awesome.
You like that?
Is she available on Amazon? Because I want to get to pick something up.
What you need to do is you need to go to hannahfairlight.com. You know what's really cool is that what you just heard, Creatures of Habit, was off her first album, and she's got a second album, Bright Future. Bright Future, she was actually engineered and produced by none other than Mr. Michael Wagner, and she works.
Oh, very nice.
She works very, very cool and very directly with him. On some stuff, so that'll be one that you'll definitely enjoy. So, and if you check her out, tell her because you heard it from D, and you know, D said, "Hey, we've had
absolutely,
yeah,
that
we've,
sounds
yeah,
awesome."
We've had,
hey, while we were on the break, I heard from that Kevin Batty Walsh. He's like, "Oh, you guys sound great. I want to do an interview." So they're already lining up.
Well, you know what? That will have to happen. And it's funny because, you know, and for those of you that are hanging out on Radio Memphis Around the World with me today, I'm talking to Mr. Ken Barr. You know, you and I, we started kind of talking, you know, again, in several conversations before we got to actually do our gig here, you know, live on air. And you know, we started kind of blossoming some things in our mind. And, you know, we've gotten some cool ideas. And I'm just going to leave it at that because I want people to wonder.
But it's really awesome, but we're not going to tell you about it.
I know. It's like really cool, and it's like really good, and, you know, it's like everything that, you know, I'm like wanting to kind of jump into and stuff, but I'm just not going to tell you about it. You just have to stay tuned in. But back to hanging out, you know, with you and stuff. You know, and it's funny because, you know, one of the references and stuff that we keep going back to, you know, obviously is We Are the Road Crew, the book you wrote. And one of the chapters that you kind of really got into, let me backtrack for a second. I do like the fact that in the middle of some stuff, there's always like rules of the road. And there's sheets of rules of the road that really pertain to whatever section it is that you're talking about. You know, mm-hmm. For instance, you know, apparently, you know, first guy on the bus ices down the beer, you know, make sure you have, you know, rules of the road, make sure that you leave food for the driver, make sure there's enough, you know, food for the whole crew, you know, and it's one of those things where first guy on the bus stock the back lounge cooler. Who made up these rules?
They're kind of understood. You know,
but somebody had to start it.
Well, I guess that's probably down in the annals of rock and roll, you know, back from whenever as things progressed. But yeah, there's just certain ways you have to live to just survive because it's close quarters on those buses, and a lot of them are a lot of the rules of the road are just good sense and good ideas, whether they're official or not. It's a good idea. First guy, like backline guys, we work the least.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone will tell you that. They love to tell you that, and it's true. So I always felt compelled to help out, you know?
Sure.
I'd grab a case of water and walk the arena floor handing out bottles of water to our crew and the stagehands.
Sure.
You know, we'd make sure that the hot food made it out to the bus and maybe got some kind of cover on it to keep the food hot. You know, there's just things you need to do because, you know, you're living and working. I mean, people work 40-hour-a-week jobs and get sick of their coworkers. Well, try living with them.
I know, right?
It can get ugly. So it's just suggestions of how we want to, you know, endure 6 months of close quarters, I think.
It is. And, you know, one of the things also, too, and like I said, as I was going through and I'm seeing, you know, some of the rules of the road and making sure that, you know, you do certain things. And, of course, you know, some of them including, you know, not having guests spend the night, you know, making sure you have secure locking suitcases and stuff. Yeah, and everybody's listening is going, well, of course. No, it's like you got to read the book to understand why these little bits and pieces come up when they did, because it goes with certain parts of the story, including a part of the story. Your book is, you know, so far what I've been able to kind of get through has been really, really, really cool in that, you know, you're sharing the experiences and, you know, you've done some stuff with some really cool people. And one of the things also, too, is that you're very humble and you're very honest and you share a particular chapter of a instance to where you are actually pretty much the person that you're putting in check. You know who I'm talking about?
No, I'm not sure where we are here.
Okay, so apparently, you know, this is a story that you've told a lot of times, and a lot of times it normally gets a laugh, but it was a good example of how cocky and oblivious, quote unquote, that people can be. And when I say people, of course, I am talking about myself, the Joe Elliott story.
Yeah, I was young and cocky and just thought the world was mine, and boy was I wrong.
So that's the beautiful thing about you is that you do put stuff in there that shows is like, okay, you've even made the mistakes of thinking a certain way. What happened with the, like I said, because I started reading a little bit before and I was like, no, I'm just gonna let him tell me. I want to hear it firsthand before I read it.
Well, it was just like, we were at a hotel, and there was a big, like, courtyard-type thing, except, you know, it had a roof, and it had, like bench seating all the way around, and there were tables, and it was just a social place to, you know, just kind of hang out. So there were a bunch of us there that were there, just kind of, I guess, figuring out where we were going to go to dinner or wherever we were going to go.
Right.
And people joined us. Well, you know, 25-year-old Ken Barr sees a beautiful woman sit next to him, and he assumes it can only mean one thing. Obviously, she wants to go home with, you know, 25-year-old Ken Barr. What other could there be? And, you know, 25-year-old Ken Barr didn't think to look on the other side of her to see if she might have shown up with somebody.
Of course
not.
She
smiled at me. So obviously she's interested.
Of course she is.
You know, these are the thought processes I had, or what few I had at the time, and she actually was a wonderful person, polite, nice, gorgeous beyond words, and, you know, from what I understand, Joe is a wonderful person as well, a gentleman. I did not get a chance to talk to him because I was hitting on his wife.
No,
bad judgment, but, you know, we all make those mistakes. It's just, mine are a bit more colorful than most.
Apparently so. So yeah. All of these things, you know, it's funny, and those of you that have tuned in, you know, I'm talking to Ken Barr. There's no way, we've already figured out that we need, like, several shows just to, you know, encompass your world and your life because of all the different people you've worked with. And it's like, I didn't even realize that you actually worked with Al Petrelli at one point, you know, as far as in the 80s and stuff. I was like,
Al Petrelli and I are our family. We played the bars together.
Okay.
I was his guitar tech when he was in Talos.
Okay.
And then the other things he did, a couple of local bands as he was trying to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the recording studio with him. I'm actually godfather to his second son, Jamie.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it just is one more part of the family.
I got to talk to him.
That's how I got the Alice Cooper gig. Al got the gig.
Ah.
Al brought me.
There it is. Okay, well, there's the answer. I'm glad I brought him up. Yeah, I got to catch up with him at the end of this right before Christmas. You know, when TSA was doing their thing, and we actually during the Memphis Metal Mondays, there's another show that I do on Monday nights, and we actually spent some time, you know, in talking, and all of you are very incestuous. I just want to tell you this, okay? Because now it's like Everybody knows everybody's hanging out with everybody. Everybody's, you know, everybody's played with everybody. Everybody's sharing the same tech, and you know, and this thing it goes back and.
Nobody else would hang with us. We had to hang out with each other.
See, now the truth comes out. All right.
That's it. We had no friends, just each other. All of us.
Nobody would That's work. Sick. Nobody's going to work with any of you. So all of you have to take care of each other when it's all said and done. All right.
Back. Well, you know, it's funny on the Alice Cooper Trash Tour, we had Al Petrelli on guitar, and at one point we had Danger Danger opening for us.
Oh my God.
And I don't know if you did. You know, Al used to be in Danger Danger.
Yes, I did, and it was funny because not too long ago, because we also on Monday nights when we do Metal Mondays and stuff, we also do Prog Time and stuff. I actually got to come go to a couple shows when he came through town, Mr. Andy Timmons, and we actually got to spend some time together and stuff too.
I learned about that. The drum tech on Alice Cooper was part of we called it the Long Island Mafia, because we were all the guys that were in the clubs together, and we were all on this tour. We had Danger Danger, and then we had their crew, Todd Confessori, Big Charlie Milton, Howard Thaler, and they called it the Long Island Mafia, because everybody up on stage was from Long Island at one point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
It was awesome.
I didn't realize, you know, because a lot of people don't realize. I'm originally from New York. It's just been a long time since I've been there. You know, I've been through there once or twice. You know, my dad's from the Bronx, okay? And I was actually, you know, born in Goshen and spent my time in Monroe as a kid.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, but yeah, Long Island apparently was the place to be. I didn't realize this.
It was, you know, and that same group of guys, you know, we hung out, like, gig nights or nights off, we were all together. It was like 10 of us, and it became just such a even closer family, you know.
Wow.
And then we'd have the same break in the tour, we'd all be home, you know, with way too much money in our pockets doing stupid things, and then we go back out on the road together and go make more money so we could come home and be stupid.
So you can go home and be stupid. So
we were together. It was, you know, and it was kind of like Goodfellas, you know.
I knew this was going to come out at some point
together.
Well, I mean, and I guess that makes sense because, you know, look at all the things that you guys were able to accomplish and stuff. And, you know, and the fact that, and all of this also, too, you know, going back to, you know, all the magical things that you do, and they're so important. One of the things that I thought was crazy was the time when you said that you needed to stop down, walk away, and live a normal life.
Walk away. Oh, when I left the road?
When you left the road.
That was a moment in time. I made that decision because, well, I was married, and I don't want to go into any of those details.
No, we don't have to.
But my, you know, at that point, I had certain ideas and certain feelings of how things should be, and I wanted a kid, and I thought, well, I need to get it together now. So that by the time a kid comes, I'm able to make a decent amount of money.
Sure.
So I left the road and didn't look back, literally. It was years before I could go to a concert because it was like visiting an old girlfriend, you know? It killed me, and I just couldn't go. I don't have kids, and I'm no longer married.
Right.
And, you know, I have let a few people know if the right opportunity came up, I'd like to go do maybe one more big one or one or two more big ones. And if the opportunity doesn't come up, that's okay too. You know, I love doing 70,000 tons of metal. That is a week of me working as hard as I have ever worked and having more fun than I've had in years.
Yes, because like I said, it's not like, and you know, and for those of you who have tuned in, you know, I'm talking to Ken Barr. It's not like you totally completely stepped away from stuff because you still have your hand, you know, in, you know, on these different events and these different projects and stuff, and you still have the younger generation and, you know, or the newer, you know, the greenhorns, if you will, you know, chomping down at you, you know, and asking you, you know, for the total advice and everything. One of the things though that you were able able to do, though, is that when you stepped away and you wound up having to kind of, you know, reinvent yourself, I guess is the best way to put it, you came up with actually something very cool and went like stage left in doing so. And as it turns out, you're an independent filmmaker, which is crazy. You know, it's still in the, I mean, still in the, you know, in the business, but you know, you went completely just somewhere else. And you know, where did that idea come from?
I had ideas, and I had these ideas for stories, and I you know, at SeaWorld where I worked, a lot of people were into film and they knew how to do stuff, and I had this idea for the origin of Santa Claus. And a couple guys from work, we went to my house one night, we filmed the thing. You know, it was a handwritten script, it was no budget, but it was amazing. And the story came out, and you know, it played, it did okay, it played at a few local things, but that sparked the interest. So I decided to take some film school, you know, go to film school.
Wow.
And I fell in love. I love the storytelling process, I truly do. Which kind of went hand in hand with the books, you know. I started, you know, the first book was We Are the Road Crew, which was just me kind of having to let all those feelings out and put I felt about it, you know, into a different medium. But going beyond that, I don't know if you're familiar with my Yule Lads books, but in Iceland, they have a certain Christmas mythology. They don't have Santa Claus. They have the Yule Lads. In Icelandic, it's the Jólasveinarnir.
Wow.
And I got a hold of that, and well, I was dating someone from Iceland, so that's how that came about. And any translations in the United States were kind of alphabet soup. So I got with a editor that was from London, lived in Iceland, so he had a good grasp of both languages. And I wrote and got illustrated the Icelandic Yule Lads, and I have a website for them, theicelandicyulelads.com. I made it to the cover of the Sunday paper in Iceland.
That is so fantastic. How cool is that?
If you do this web search, if you do Kenbar Yule Lads, you will be taken to Iceland Magazine. They did a full-page article on it.
That is,
you know,
fantastic.
They embraced what I did, which is amazing, and it's something I'm pursuing more. I want to eventually do an animation deal with the Yule Lads, but, you know, it's a process, and I'm learning.
Right.
And the art of storytelling truly is an art, you know? I just finally got my website together, and I put three titles on there. I put author, filmmaker, and raconteur.
There it is.
Because I can tell a story, you know?
There it is.
And I truly love the storytelling process. I love books and films. I've got a whole circle of people around me now that believe in the films I write, the films I want to make, and we're working on something that's going to involve miniature robots, a 7-foot-tall robot, marionette puppets. We're pulling out all the old vintage 50s, 60s stuff, and it's going to be the Badass Robots Revenge.
I love it.
And I've got an amazing costumer named Gina Vincenza. She just made a cape like the old Ming the Merciless from the 30s for the robot.
Wow.
You know, and when something like that comes together, it's just such a great feeling. You know, if I were a musician, I bet you that's how they feel when they finish a record. You know, it's probably very similar.
It's got to be.
You know, because when, like, I'll give you another story since I'm already rambling anyway incoherently.
Oh, okay.
When I got my proof copy of We Are the Road Crew, it didn't leave my hands for about 2 days. It was such an amazing feeling.
Aww.
This book. And one of the first things I did was I sent a couple copies to Metal Hammer Magazine when they were still in business. And they reviewed it in one of the little corner pieces they do, and they gave it a good review.
Love it.
That was more amazing than anything I ever had in my life, that feeling. So
that is a fantastic deal. And you know, it's funny because, you know, that's one of the corner pieces and stuff of what, you know, aside from, you know, what you and I are talking about, all that information, We also had a conversation on the phone one night. You know, you and I were talking this past week, and you know, one of the things, and you'll learn a lot about me in that I'm always trying to pour stuff in my head, you know, and I'm always trying to learn something, or I'm always trying to, you know, because I always feel like I don't know enough, right? And you know,
there's so much to learn. I'm a big history buff, so I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and, you know, and even though, like, even in the industry and stuff that we're in and stuff, you know. We talked about those that kind of went to school and, you know, everything, and you were real cool about the way you said it, because you were like, this, you can't get this in school. You know, the stuff that we're talking about, you cannot get in school. You got to be in it in order to understand what we're talking about, you know, and it was important to hear that, you know, because, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, you know, there's individuals out there, you know, that are tuned in, you know, some are friends, some are family, as you put it, some are your brothers, you know, and, you know, thank you all, you know, again, you know, for hanging out, you know, and tuning in, you know, and listening to Ken, you know, and I talk about, you know, his awesome and cool career. But one of the other things also too, is that there's individuals out there that want to be part of something. Okay. And they want to feel like they can plug in, and you know, creative arts is such a crazy cool thing that a lot of people don't realize there's so many different ways that you can be a part of something. And you just ultimately you took very, very specific sides, you know, of the industry and plugged yourself into it, you know what I mean? And came in like raging and plugged yourself into it. And a lot of people are thinking like, oh my God, like where did this come from? And this, you know, the only thing I can get from you is that it all just came out of a sheer driven love in your heart for it. That's it.
Whenever you hear me talk about the music business and music, I mean, you can hear I truly did love it, and I still do.
Mm-hmm.
You know it, and I
you're like that way about
a lot.
You know,
it's like I forget who said it originally, but you know, do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yes,
and
yes,
that's what it was. And you know, I think it's important for people to know too that you know, when it's time to close the door on one dream, there can be other ones. You know, I'm proud of the movies I make. I'm proud of the books I write. My last sci-fi movie, Plan 10, played MegaCon in Tampa last October. That was huge.
That's a big deal. Congratulations to you. Here's the thing, though. I don't think you're done. I think, remember, we talked about this. I think you're going to wind up doing it all at the same time, all at one time, and you're going to be juggling it, and you're going to go crazy doing it, but it's going to be like a good crazy. I think that there's going to be one more. I don't know. Call it, you know, I'm reaching. Maybe I got some, you know, some kind of, you know, telepathy or some kind of message. But I just feel like there's going to be another big something, a big tour, a big something that's going to happen for you.
You know, it's funny because I've had that feeling too, and I really feel like there is one more, you know, last roundup for Ken Barr.
You got to. Oh my God, are you serious? There's a legion of the ones that are coming through the ranks, man. You have got to get through it.
Yep. Just one more. That's why, you know, I put the word out about 6 months ago, and if it takes a year for something to come up, that's fine. I'm going nowhere. I'm busy, you know.
You're busy.
I've got projects upon projects working, so...
You're making movies, you know, you're playing with marionettes, you got robots rolling around in your house, you're building fire columns for 70,000 tons of metal, you've got sea worlds, you know, stuff exploding. There's a lot going on in your world. And what is it about everything always exploding around you?
Well, if it explodes, I can't break it. it's already blown up.
Well, I tell you what, honey, I do want to thank you for all this time that you've spent with me.
Thank you for having me on, and thank everybody that's taken the time to listen. I appreciate it. You know, it's the people that take the time to listen to people like me talk that make it possible for me to do the things that I do, and I appreciate that.
No, man, you've got a lot of some cool stuff. And I have a feeling, you know, and for those of you that are hanging out and tuning in, you know, I have a feeling that we're going to be hearing a little bit more from you. And you know, we're going to be able to catch up on a couple of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for all news Ken Barr, it's ken-barr.com. I finally got a website.
Yes.
I'm approaching the millennium as we speak. You know?
He's like, I've made it. I've arrived.
Okay.
Is that the best way?
I'm in the 21st century. I've got a website. I'm so proud.
Is that the best way that everybody can get in touch with you and find out what you've got going on?
Yeah, because what I did was I worked with a web guy, but I knew what I wanted, and I had a website built, and it actually splits into two. Mm-hmm. And there's one side that's Ken Barr Films, and the other side is Ken Barr Author, and it literally takes you down two separate paths, and it's just basic information, because people don't need a lot of bells and whistles and distractions. It's here's where you can find the movies, here's where you can find the books. And my blog is attached to that. My email is attached to that. So
perfect.
Everything I do, but under one roof, which is what I've always wanted.
Perfect. So everybody can learn all more that much more about you. Good deal.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I tell you, I know you've probably got some stuff you need to get into this afternoon. You and I will catch up this week, and you know
a bunch of the crew guys, I connected you with them on a message through Facebook, so we can get that, you know.
I love it. Love it. Yes. And so we'll be able to chit-chat and stuff like that. Absolutely.
And let me say goodbye to Kevin Batty Walsh. He's out there.
Okay.
Probably thirsty for a beer. So.
Okay.
Have one, brother. I'll see you soon.
Good deal. Fantastic. Well, I know that they're probably tuned in.
Take care, Dee. Thank you for having me on. I look forward to, you know, whatever else, you know, comes up.
Stop it. We're not talking. Remember?
I know. That's all right. They'll never catch on.
Figure it out. No, we'll chat. We'll chat soon, sweetheart. Thanks so much for your time, honey.
Thank you. Take care now.
All right, baby.
Bye.
All right. That is the wonderful Mr. Ken Barr. You guys heard it here. If you want to learn more about what he's got going on, you know, Ken-Barr, B-A-R-R, you know, .com. He is into so many different things. He's so humble and he's so cool about it. You know, independent filmmaker, you know, creator of Ken Barr Films. Of course, you know, he still, as much as he makes it sound like he's kind of pulled out of the stuff as far as behind the scenes, you know, as far as what, you know, road crews and management and stuff and event production does, he's still in the middle of all of it. He's still blowing things up again. You heard it here. 70,000 tons of metal. You know, he's done stuff as far. He's doing stuff currently, you know, for the SeaWorld event programs, you know, and a couple of other things, you know, under his belt, if you will. So, you know, definitely one of those things you want to kind of keep up with. I highly recommend, you know, for those of you that are in the industry and you want to learn how you can kind of plug in, you know, and even though maybe you don't play guitar, maybe you can't sing, you know, maybe you don't know what it feels like to hold a drumstick or even to get the tambourine to work. But I tell you, there are places and there are things that can be important for you to be involved with, and in fact are extremely important, because if it wasn't for people like the road crew that were behind, you know, those insanely cool concerts and those cool performances that everybody likes to go and see and participate in, it wouldn't happen, now would it? You know, that right there is an art. So thanks again, you know, to Ken Barr for hanging out with us right here on Radio Memphis Around the World. It's been kind of a special interview for you guys, because I want you know, that he's got so much more. We could have been on here for the entire show. And so, you know, you guys need to kind of stay tuned in, because you never know what may come up from us right here on Radio Memphis. All right. So what I need to do, let me go ahead and play a song. And, you know, we got you know, a couple, you know, commercial break that we kind of need to get into. And then it's right at 3 o'clock. That means we've got a rock block coming from your artist of the month for Radio Memphis Around the World is Ms. Bryce Hitchcock, so you guys don't want to go anywhere. But first, I actually have a request. It is Woodhawk, and this song, okay, out of Canada, this song, A New Hope. Let me go ahead and confirm. Yes, it is what you think it is. And if you are a true Star Wars fan and you are looking for that Jedi Master, this is it right here, only on Radio Memphis.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.